Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Native on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Brianna Kurtz. Each week, this show features a U.S. or international destination and uses food and drink as a gateway to explore and celebrate the gastronomic and economic virtues of a location. Part travel show, part current affairs, Native recognizes the fact that food culture and commerce are everywhere and takes the opportunity to examine this relationship by using the eyes, ears, and taste buds of farmers, chefs, journalists, and the like. Today, we are going all the way to Queens, and we're really lucky to have Jeff Orlick help take us there. Jeff is the Queens custodian, leading food tours throughout the borough. So, Jeff, I want to know, how did you get started as this, like, Queens cultural ambassador?
Okay, yeah, it's a pleasure to be here, actually. I love that you guys call this Make Queens a Destination, because that really hasn't been named that before. I moved here about 7.5, 8 years ago, and I started writing my blog and stuff, but, and then I started, and it was, I moved to Jackson Heights, Queens, where it's a little, actually, lonely. Everyone's a foreigner there, no matter where you're from, and so making friends there was pretty tough in the beginning. Then I started, like, a food club, sort of, like, a restaurant club or something. I made friends through that. And I guess I realized there was, you could, when you organize a big group, you could have certain allowances to you. So I got off on that. It was awesome. So I started doing bigger events, did these big taco crawls. I didn't write as much on my blog anymore. Basically, I didn't want to contribute to food pornography. I wanted to bring people actually in the neighborhood. So I started doing the tours. And my first one was the, Roosevelt Avenue Midnight Street Food Crawl, which reporters loved and got picked up everywhere. And it's been rolling. It's been very interesting. The tours have opened up a lot of doors. And now we're bringing in people from Australia. It's a third Australian, third European, third U.S. So it's amazing how many people are experiencing this from all over the place.
Excellent. So what really drew you in? Like, what makes Queens such a vibrant food community, and why should people care?
We have all these cultural enclaves, which makes it different from many other places in the world. I mean, it just has more cultural enclaves. Like, you get off at the 74th Street Station, Jackson Heights. To the west of you is Little Manila. North is Little Bangladesh. Little India's a little to the right of that. South of you is Thai Town. Even further south is Malaysian Chinese. East of you is it's more South American and Mexican, but they're clumped together, so they're all feeding their own communities. They're not looking for, I mean, as of yet, most of them aren't looking for tourists now, and that's awesome. They're not changing their tastes at all.
Kind of self-sustaining everything within the neighborhood, within the community.
It's trying to. I mean, a lot of times they don't, you know, it's hard to introduce a new community to, like, the New York crowd, Manhattan crowd, to, say, Tibetan food. It's not easy. So right now, the object is to feed themselves, get money from them, from their own community, and just by feeding their own community that's there.
And so I want to ask a yes or no question, and then we'll go a bit deeper. Do you think that there's cuisine, like, classism?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, I just think
that's the most I could say in that form, that where I could, you give me a yes or no answer.
Mm-hmm. But let's go a little bit deeper.
If I could say yes, that's like a paragraph.
That there's this kind of stereotyping of ethnic food, this, like, denigration to it being, like, other or unsafe or just kind of lumping like Asian food is Asian food, but really it's Malaysian food and Chinese food and Thai food. But it's kind of just put under this umbrella. So like, what's up with that? Is there any way that ethnic food's ever going to step up, you know, and people are going to like look at it with a little bit more respect and look at it a little bit deeper?
Yeah, I think, I mean, when you have a small sample size in your life, I mean, stereotypes in general, or people say racist too. I mean, when you have a small sample size, you tend to think that that whole genre of whatever is like that. So I guess, you know, many people are only familiar with Chinese food, and Chinese is a huge... it's a huge term. That Chinese food is just cheap takeout. But I think as we get more familiar and more ingrained in our culture, it's going to expand. I mean, first, maybe Mexican food is going to be next. We have more Latin Americans coming here, and your neighbors are going to be Latin American. So you'll see, you'll be introduced to it from the time you're born, I guess, or your kids or whatever. And so then that'll be more accepted. I mean, it goes the other way. You think of French food as high class.
Right, exactly.
But I don't know, maybe they get upset that they can't be seen as like more casual.
Possibly. I mean, I think, is it maybe about packaging? Like French bistros or, you know, fine dining restaurants tend to have like the white tablecloths and the wine glasses and nice lighting and or even like, you know, some of the restaurants in Brooklyn, kind of this very like current modern decor, where in Queens, it's a little bit more, you know, just tables, chairs, like.
Yeah, a little more rustic.
Yeah.
I guess.
Do you think that dissuades people from experiencing it a little bit more in this context of having a meal and it being an event and experience, you know?
Well, I don't think there really aren't that many places in Queens for like a fancy meal, mm-hmm. or an occasion. I mean, it's an occasion as in an adventure.
Yeah.
But as far as like an anniversary or something, or a next level stuff, I mean, it could be next level in taste, but I guess people aren't selling it as much as a next level in experience in price range, yeah. Another dollar for it.
So in the last, you know, almost decade since you've been there, how is the borough changing?
It's. I mean, that's why I moved here, because it's always changing. It's very interesting. Other cultures are supplanting cultures. Like, you know, 50 years ago, Corona, it was Italians. And they were... it was still seen as the same type of neighborhood, the same sort of middle class. But now we have a lot of Mexicans, Ecuadorians there. And it's still seen the same way. I mean, a lot of families there. It's a great neighborhood. I would love to move there if the trains were better. But also there's gangs. There were gangs then. There were Italian gangs then. Now there's gangs here now. But that being said, it's not that dangerous at all. But like who are the immigrants are changing. Mm-hmm. Now Italians... are Americans now. They're the people that are building all the buildings, and like those are the super rich people right now. You know, Queens is like the seed of New York and America. We have all these new immigrants here, and this is going to be the future. So who we have coming in now? A lot of Bangladeshi, a lot of Tibetan, Nepalese. That's who I see in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And you go to Astoria, you see Brazilians coming in, and that's, in the past, there was more Greeks there. I mean, there still are a lot, but that's just, it's changing. It's
shifting. And how does that look on the ground as far as food's concerned? Are there new spots opening up, new streets that are kind of that demographic shifting to more?
It's very interesting. As I said, it's always changing. The enclaves are changing.
Are there any restaurants in particular that have opened up that you're excited about or haven't checked out yet you're looking forward to?
Right by me in Elmhurst on Woodside Avenue and Broadway, it's becoming Thai Town. It wasn't necessarily, it was all mixed up when I first moved here like 7 years ago, but now it's strongly Thai Town around in the 70s and Woodside Avenue and then Broadway. It's in the past 2 months, there have been two new restaurants there. It's very interesting. And there, and also one of them was from, I forgot what the name of it was, in Manhattan. They started in Manhattan, and now they took a place in Broadway because they wanted to offer stuff to their own people, which is very exciting for me. It's a switch. Usually the goal is the other way around.
So is there a seasonality in Queens? Like, is there something you're looking forward to coming up in the fall? Or is it just like the same throughout
the year,
pretty much?
Like
as far as maybe street food, is there like vendors offering different things in the fall than they are in the spring or summer?
Maybe. I mean, tamales are offered all the time. They're offered now, but it is, and the things that go along with tamales, like arroz con leche or champurrado, it is offered now, but it's more of a thing in the winter. In the summer, it becomes more like more shaved ice vendors in Roosevelt Avenue. I'm trying to think of, you know, there's always holidays going on. There's so many cultures that every other weekend is a holiday. So there's always something new.
Is there a particular festival or holiday that you get really excited about when it's that time of year?
Christmas is very interesting, especially in like Little Manila. There's always some special thing going on. There's, for me, like just walking around, you see all the they do catering gigs, and they close off a whole restaurant just so they could prepare and do like a takeout for Christmas.
Is there a dish you can think of that you remember that you like eating?
I don't know. It's, is it Ecuadorian? I mean, whether or not I like them, it's very interesting to see. There's an Ecuadorian Christmas, drink. It's just special because at the certain time it comes out and that's interesting. But, you know, it happens. It's all the time. I don't know. It's
constant.
Yeah,
always something going on.
I give you. I don't have any specifics because there's always something happening in Queens.
Okay, cool. Well, we're gonna take a quick break, but stay with us. When we come back, we'll be chatting more about Queens, including some upcoming events in the borough you should get in on. We'll be right back.
What's it gonna be? You take the holy high road, or you come along with me. I'll show you what it's like to live with all the chances that I'll give. We won't get lost amongst the crowd. People will turn their heads and howl. Just take a look at you. You're dreaming of a life out on the road with me. We'll swing in style all the miles. We'll get drunk until we die. And as we lay down to retire, we'll ignite the bed on fire. Just listen to my call. As hushed as the old night owl, I'm calling out to you. Can't you hear me singing loud? We could be dancing on a cloud. You've only got one life to live, so give it to me.
This is Chris Howell from Cane Vineyard and Winery, calling in from Spring Mountain above the Napa Valley. Thank you for listening to this show. In our industrial world of highly processed food and wine, we support the values of Heritage Radio Network. All of us at Cane encourage you to seek out individuality and beauty in everything you eat and drink. To learn more about us, go to cane5.com.
Hi, how are you? My name is Andrew WK. They say when things are very delicious, it must be Heritage Radio.
All right, we are back. I'm Brianna Kurtz, and you are listening to Native on Heritage Radio Network, and we are talking Queens with Jeff Orlick. So New York City has about 25,000 street vendors. 90% of them are run by immigrants, and about half of them are women. So I want to talk about something, Jeff, that I saw on your blog recently, iwantmorefood.com, and the tamales being confiscated by the cops. Like, what's going on with that?
Yeah, it's an issue. You know, the tamale ladies in general, issue is most of them don't have a permit. And New York City does not have, it only has about 3,100 permits available, plus about 1,000 or 1,500 seasonal permits. It's basically not enough for everyone. And if you were to get some, if you already wanted to get one, legally it's about $300, which is fine, but there's about a 15-year waiting list, so it's impossible to get a permit if you want one. How do you do it? You do it illegally. You get a permit on the black market for about $22,000 for 2 years, and that's just for a sticker. And then you could, then you have to get a truck and everything. So these tamale ladies, who we see a lot in Jackson Heights and Corona, they don't have a permit usually. And so they don't have a proper vehicle. And so they push a push cart or a shopping cart on the street, and then they sell through that. And so a lot of times the restaurants get upset, they complain, and then the police come, and sometimes they give them tickets. And rarer, but sometimes they take their tamales and they throw them out, or the Department of Health might come, put bleach on them to nullify them as food. It's a very provocative event, but I don't know. They're not selling with a permit, which is not allowed. A lot of them do know that, you know, this is the deal. It's an issue. I mean, it's been an issue in New York for 300 or 400 years. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's never not going to be an issue, but it's the most innocent thing. Someone is selling a $1 tamal on the street, and everyone loves it, except for some restaurants. They don't love it.
Because it takes business away from them.
Well, they see it as taking business away, but given a $1 tamal or going to a restaurant, that it's a different experience. So it's a very complex issue.
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of see both sides. If you don't have a permit, the city has to ensure the public health of, you know, the food that's being produced and sold to consumers. And, you know, but then there's the side that it's like the cops might have better things to do than target little tamale ladies. And I'm glad you said that they come and pour bleach on them, because I just have this vision of cops confiscating, like, you know, coolers full of tamales and then going back to the precinct and just, like, chowing down. So,
oh, they definitely, they definitely throw them out. And even the one I saw, I think they offered for the girl to take it home or something. I forgot what happened. Yeah, but for the police, you know, if they're by themselves, if they're on their own, path, no one has complained. I mean, there are drug dealers, and there's prostitution in the area. Whether or not you think that should be allowed, but you know, what's safer to you to give someone a ticket for, and what's easier? You have usually a small woman, about 5 foot tall, and she's not running. She's definitely not armed. She's not going to fight back. So do you want to give that person a ticket? Or do you want to give a nefarious-looking gentleman who may or may not be armed, who you don't actually see them selling, you'd have to go a little bit undercover to see, would you rather give that person a ticket? Or would you rather investigate that? I mean, if you're a police officer, you have to do something, or else if you don't give a ticket, you look like you're doing nothing all day.
I mean, that's their job, so...
You know, it's their job, yeah. I mean, their job is to make it look like... I mean, to protect whatever. But also, you know, you have a job. You want to look like you're doing something.
Enforcing. And, well, I mean, hopefully the city could make some progress on that issue and just kind of working with the vendors rather than working against them. It is a big issue with the permits and the number of permits and the black market of permits, so...
It's always going to be... It will never stop being an issue.
All right. Well, switching gears, you have a project coming up, Viva Comida. It's this weekend in Queens. Right. What is the story about that?
Yeah, Viva La Comida this Saturday, September 20th at 1 p.m. till 8 p.m. So basically, this is a lot of my things are dream come trues. A lot of things I do. I'm very lucky to live in like an organic content farm of Roosevelt Avenue. And so this was a dream come true of having all these food trucks from around the city. This one is mostly from around Queens, and it's real food. It's free admission. You pay what you wish, and it's a whole day of food mostly, but also music. We have magic. I'm picking up hula hoops today. We have RC car demo. All these other stuff that's happening. So who is it? Phil Spector has his wall of sound. This is like a wall of entertainment. It's a constant
wall of energy.
Wall of energy. Yeah.
And so the New York Times has said Viva La Comida puts the spotlight on ethnic food of the city's most diverse borough, Queens. And so 82nd Street and Roosevelt Avenue, you said 1 to 8 p.m. It's supposed to be gorgeous this weekend. It's free. So everyone should check it out. What kind of food can people see there?
Yeah, we're very lucky. So, okay. So the vendor, so we have about 10 vendors. So there's a Momo vendor. Momos are Himalayan dumplings. There is this legendary hot dog truck from Woodhaven, and I think hot dogs have been out of the spotlight for a while. I want to bring it back.
All right.
The arepa lady, who's world famous for doing her Colombian arepas. We have an Ecuadorian food cart, which you'll hopefully see a whole pig head on. You see them in like Junction Boulevard around there. Ricas Botanas, which is like a Mexican snack vendor. Coyote Dormilon, which is a Mexican, you know, tacos and quesadillas. There is Manos Parianos, Peruvian, Indian vendor, Mystic Masala, Espumillas, which is an Ecuadorian dessert, Obleas, Colombian dessert, and two more, which I apologize if I can't. But then there's also restaurants on the avenue, which are...
They're going to have, like, the doors open, be participating as well.
We're trying to get them to sell outside, yeah. So they're going to have stuff outside. There's the Indian salon. We're getting them to do henna outside.
Mm-hmm.
She wanted to do eyebrow threading, which I'm not. I hate to limit creativity because I love her enthusiasm, but I'm a little concerned about eyebrow hair getting in all
in the food.
But so we'll see what she does. Hopefully it's just henna. But whatever. If she's happy, then I'm happy.
It sounds like it's going to be a real like festival, and
it's I don't know if glorified is negative or positive. It's like a glorified street fair. It's totally homey and free to... You just come and have fun. Pay what you wish. And that's like my dream. This is the best fair that I could think of.
Excellent.
Until next year, where it's 10 times as big.
Absolutely. So we've got a couple minutes left. I want to wrap up the show by talking about pizza. You and I were... Sure. I know pizza is one of your things. You've got some strong opinions about it. And you had mentioned that you were a little... bothered, upset about how pizza was trending towards becoming non-regional. So can you explain that?
Yeah, it's an issue. You know, a lot of places, they prop themselves up as having authentic pizza where they would import all the ingredients from Italy. But the issue is, you know, if we import the same things as they do in St. Louis or L.A. or Montana, then you're getting the same product wherever you are. And for me, I'm not looking for a cookie cutter recipe. I want to see something that could only exist right here. So, I mean, I'm a slice fan. I like seeing different slices and different styles. And you can't go anywhere else in America and find the same slices as you do here. It could be the water. There's a lot of theories about that. But it's just, I don't know. It's not exciting for me to go to another city and have a beautiful slice of pizza. Because, you know, the beautiful slice is the same thing right here. It's not as interesting. I love regionality and everything.
What's one of your favorite slices in the city? I know it's hard to say, like, pick your favorite. But just name, like, maybe one or two that you...
Yeah, the one I'm thinking of right off the bat is Amore in Flushing. It's so juicy, I guess. It's an old place. It's been around, I don't know how, it's been around for like 30 years, I think. And then they have lineage to another place, but whatever. But it's just like so cheesy and saucy, and the crust is like just the right amount of chewiness. It's awesome. There's a lot, though. What else around here? Let's think around. Oh, one more. Maybe Williamsburg Pizza. They're new, and they're awesome. They do it really well.
So maybe like there's an old guard and like a new.
Well, they're new, but they have like an old style.
Excellent.
Roberta's is great too.
Well, speaking of...
I haven't
been
here a long time, though.
Yeah, well, speaking of, are you hungry?
Yeah, right. Definitely.
Well, let's get out of here and go eat some pizza. That's all for Native today. Thanks for Jeff Orlick for joining me. You can find out more about Jeff at iwantmorefood.com and more about me at briannakurtz.com. We will be right back here next Thursday, live at 11 a.m. when I will be talking to the queen of Irish food, Clodagh McKenna. She is not to be missed. See you then.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.